March 13, 2012.
Council Goby's on the way right now also.
Oh, is he? Okay, well, I'll open up the meeting of March 13th, the Central Marine Sanitation Agency meeting. Please join me in the pledge of flag. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes. Boro, Dupar.
Here.
Guasco.
Here.
Hartzell.
Here.
Heller.
Present.
Johnson. Miggs. Lappert. Phillips.
Here.
Levine. Hilmer. Sullivan. Thank you.
Okay. We have a quorum. Next up is open time for public participation. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on an item that's not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none. Move on to the consent calendar. Is there any objections or any comments on the consent calendar?
Well, we're going to abstain from item 4A.
I had a question on item 4E.
Okay.
It's just kind of minor, but staff will know the answer. I got to pull it up here. On the metric having to do with biogas production, and I mean energy produced. I'm curious as to why we produced almost 453,000 kilowatt hours when our target or goal is 380 to 460, so we're under the 460, but the target figures were 12 to 24,000 as a value, and our just short of the upper limit is only assessed as a value of 10,000.
I could answer that.
All right.
Okay, so the agency produced 453,000 kilowatt hours, and what that's a measure of is how much energy the cogeneration system's generator produced, and we measure that directly. And then the next line is the value of the biogas equivalent of that energy, and that can be calculated two ways. The first is looking at the cost, the unit cost of natural gas, and that biogas that we produce to use to generate electricity, what's the natural gas cost equivalent of that? Or you can look at electricity purchasing cost. This value here in this metric report compares using the natural gas unit cost through our procurement contract with SPUR. And my understanding is that the natural gas procurement cost has been, you know, is pretty low nowadays. It's about, I think, 37 to 38 cents per therm. In the past, it got up to almost well over a dollar, even close to $2 back in 2002. So this range here is based on a certain, you know, natural gas cost range. But we're right now lower than that at 37 cents. If we were to look at the value of the biogas in terms of electricity cost per kilowatt hour, it would be a lot more than $9,000. But our electricity cost, it's a, you know, it's like a quarter inch thick bill with all kinds of standby charges and demand charges and other things. That when we were developing the metric report, we thought it would just be easier for staff to look at just the unit cost of natural gas to use it as a basis to calculate the natural gas, the biogas cost equivalent. Does that answer your question?
My butane provider didn't get that memo. Thank you. I'll be happy to move approval of the consent calendar.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Is there anybody from the public that wishes to comment on an item in the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, I'll come back. I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Any abstentions? With regard to 4A.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is item number 5. This is our outside council's opinion on some questions posed. Jack, do you want to summarize?
Well, basically, good evening. Basically, that this matter was referred to the Raggiani Freitas firm After concerns were raised and a letter was received from Ross Valley Sanitary District Attorneys, and as you may recall, a few years ago, a similar issue was presented. I had opined that it was proper for CMSA to engage in contracts with outside agencies for the services, and I think at that time it was the fog issue, and Jason, if you'll refresh my memory.
Food energy. Yeah.
Food energy, and then and I think that it may have been some contract with outside services relating to somebody else as well, but I'm not positive. At that time, because of concerns raised at the board, we referred the issue to outside counsel. This was an attorney outside the county who had represented both Novato Sanitary District in the past and currently, and also had represented Ross Valley Sanitary District in the past on an issue or two. And that attorney opined at that time that it was proper for CMSA to engage in the outside contracts. On this occasion, at your February board meeting, I decided because of the fact that this agency picked this outside attorney that opined last time, a few years ago, as an arbitrator, that we should send it to a different outside counsel for an opinion. And thus, Raggi Antifreitas was contacted, and they performed the services as agreed, and I received their opinion yesterday, and basically it's a...
pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, it's 6-8-page opinion, and it covers the issues, and they have opined that it is proper for a CMSA to engage in the outside contracts. And that supports my opinion, both 2-3 years ago and today.
Okay, and there was some discussion last meeting regarding documents to provide to the attorney. Counsel.
Yes, pardon me. At last meeting, Commissioner Johnson indicated that at the time that we went outside a few years ago, that she did not get the proper input to the outside counsel in terms of providing documents to that person so that they could do a thorough opinion. And I never recalled that. I never recalled that occurring at all. I felt that the outside counsel 2-3 years ago had done a thorough opinion. Notwithstanding that, I invited her to submit any and all documents at the February meeting at any time to me, and I would pass them on. I did not want that statement repeated in the sense that I wanted to ensure that Ross Valley had a thorough vetting of the issue. Okay, and I never heard back from Commissioner Johnson. I checked with General Manager Dow about that as to whether there were any documents, and he indicated that he had not received any documents at all either. Okay. And we did provide all the documents requested by the Raggi Antifreitas firm, and in their opinion, they have several exhibits that both support their opinion, but that assured me that they did do a thorough analysis of the issue.
Okay. Yeah, we provided the amended JPA, a memo that's attached to this staff report that was presented and discussed with the board, about a year ago in February, pertaining to the various contracts that the agency has. When were those adopted? When were they revised? What was the revenues and the profit from those contracts? We also provided the two letters we received from Ross Valley, the November letter, where they claimed that CMSA could not provide outside services to Novato Sanitary District or to the County of Marin, and then the letter that we received the day of the board meeting last month saying that we cannot provide the services for a couple reasons to Department of Corrections. And we also provided the 1981 agreement between the Department of Corrections and the Ross Valley Sanitary District, along with some excerpts from our budget.
So, Commissioner Roscoe?
When I received this, I was kind of concerned. I hadn't heard about this at the Ross Valley until I got my board packet, this particular letter. As I recollect, in April 2010, this board created a policy that spoke to, you know, we've been spoken to as the Ross Valley for not being sending documents, letters and things to CMSA ahead of the board meetings or the board packets being produced. So I feel that this was not handled transparently, this item.
This letter
from Reg Andy, if it was to involve, you know, airing on the Ross Valley item by Reg Andy and Freitas, we would have liked to have seen that letter before it was put in this board packet. So,
What would you like to have seen? You would like to have seen their opinion before it came out?
We would like to have had a heads up on this. I think we've been asked to do that by this group on occasion.
No, I'm just trying to understand. Right.
We authorized to obtain the opinion at the last meeting, and we said we'd bring it back at the latest tonight. And the draft opinion was provided to myself and Jack yesterday, you know, mid-afternoon for review, and the final opinion was provided by about 4:30 this afternoon by Gary Reganti's associate.
So the pending of it on the 8th, and then the response.
Well, we think that it met the standard of the Brown Act.
I have a question.
And are you done?
I'm done. Thank you. All right. On, and I didn't just glance through it, but I didn't see anything for Exhibit D. It's just one page from LAFCO report of 1985. I think they're showing the vote, and I'm not quite sure what it was for.
Yeah, this is Exhibit D's reference, you know, the pages of the opinion letter here. And what Exhibit D is. Yeah, what Reg Ante's firm did is they contacted LAFCO, and they received this resolution that was passed by LAFCO in 1985, where they denied the Ross Valley's request to annex those San Quentin prison assets.
I've seen that, but they didn't put both pages in. Was it simply, does anyone else just have the final page?
I just had that, too.
Oh, doesn't have Exhibit D here?
No.
The page is just the signature page.
Oh, I had the same thing as you, Barbara. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that. There was a copying.
Okay, so I have seen the other letter. I understand.
Yeah, this is the LAFCO resolution.
Why don't we just have the signatures?
Sorry about that.
Okay.
We were trying to copy this at the last minute.
So that resolution, so the page that's missing from the board packet is a resolution denying the annexation?
Yeah, and we've discussed that at this board level before, you know, and I provided a copy of that resolution. I think actually Commissioner Guasco provided a copy of that resolution back in November of 2010 with the agreement and all the amendments on that 81, and then we talked about that in February of last year.
And I think my submitting that gave rise to that policy in 2010 regarding just showing up the documents and distributing them out. You know, that would seem inappropriate to the board at the time, and that's why we have these policies on not just showing up with surprise documents.
Yeah, I think Commissioner Guasco is talking to, you know, a particular section of a policy within the CMSC Board of Commissioners policies, and those were developed as a response to a Marine Grand Jury report on the CMSC Board. So we developed these policies, and one of which has what Commissioner Guasco was talking about.
I don't disagree with you. I think it's a great idea, an appropriate idea to have as much as we possibly can in advance of a meeting. What I see is the difference here is this was specified as being something the board requested come to us. And when you handed the packet out, it was your response to something. It wasn't something that was requested or specified as being a month before going to be delivered that day. So I think there's a little difference because none of us were expecting the other packet, but in this case, we were. We wish, of course, it had come sooner. But
I mean, it's we knew that we were going to have an opinion tonight. That's kind of different than a surprise packet of information that is in addition or over and above your agenda. It's actually not all that long to read the it's just like five pages. Six
so
pages.
This item dated the 13th from Reggie. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Dated March 13th, 2012. This is the first time I've seen this. I mean, I've got this to work with at home, the letter dated the 8th as a board memorandum.
Right. It was in our dais tonight because it arrived here at 4:30 or something.
Yeah, I can see it coming on the date. Thank you.
Okay, any other? Gary?
My observation is that this is an informational item. And therefore, no action is to be taken. So it seems to me to refer to this when action is needed. It relates to this. It strikes me that it was requested. Now, I'm here as an alternate, I know, but it strikes me that it was requested, it was received by the staff, and delivered as promptly as possible. And I'm not sure what else one would expect. If there was action to be taken when you were going to rely upon this information, I'd table that action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is just an informational item. It kind of summarizes our JPA as to where our functions are and legal authority is. Any other comments? Okay, is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. All right, so even if this is just an informational item, we just accept the report from Reagan and Frieda's?
Yeah, just informational, no action, no direction.
Okay. Do we send out a copy to Ross Valley, to the commissioners?
Not this letter. We just got it, printed it out, and distributed tonight.
We could.
We could do that, definitely.
I mean, because I've seen newspaper comments that basically state that we're not permitted to negotiate with San Quentin.
Okay.
I don't know, unless you want to bring that up to the board.
No, thank you.
Would you like us to?
Well, I think it would be helpful.
Okay.
Sort of, trying to
actually, would you have a copy sent to our general city manager
To the manager?
Yeah, I'll send one to the managers and the Ross Valley board
members. Okay. You can do that as a PDF.
Email it out to
me? Yeah, I guess email it. Okay. Moving on, next up is item number 6. This is digestion improvement plan facility program task order for supplemental engineering and infrastructure.
Thank you, Chair Clark. So the agency has had a professional services agreement with Kenny James Consultants since April 2009, and under this agreement they've completed all of the pre-design and design level activities for the digester improvement project, which also includes a fat oils and grease facility, and also this facility can receive and process commercial food waste. This agreement back in 2009 was just for pre-design level services, and it's been, as noted in the staff report, it's been amended about 5 times for design services, then to modify the design of the fog facility so it could receive the commercial food waste for processing. Then there were task orders and amendments to complete the design level work before public bidding. And the last task order and its amendment were for the engineering services during construction, which is when the design engineer provides various consulting and review and other types of professional services during the construction phase of the project. So as noted in the staff report, we have an amendment number 6 tonight with a supporting task order, and it's essentially to augment the budget of a few of the tasks within the 2011 engineering services during construction scope of work. And specifically it's to augment the budget for project management, which is a small amount, by Kennedy Jinks, project manager, additional assistance and startup of the digester equipment and the Fats Oglesby facility for some work that's been completed already, and that is bringing the geotechnical engineer to do some site investigation work of the excavation for different, you know, facilities that were part of the project to make sure the soil was competent, or if we need to over-excavate and backfill with structural material. And the biggest piece of the task order is to augment the submittal review items. That one's about $70,000. Essentially, we're augmenting that because we had Kenny Jenks really sharpen their pencil when they developed the budget allocations for each task within the scope of work, and we didn't include any contingency at all. So under the submittals, they kind of looked through the technical specifications for all the different equipment and materials and systems and processes, and they said, okay, this is how many submittals we'll expect, this is how many maybe resubmittals we'll get, this is how many hours we'll estimate to completely review each of these submittals, and all of those, the hour estimate is based on a database they have for all of their projects. And they look at similar type projects of similar scope and magnitude and how many submittals and hours came on those projects. So we refined that these tasks with them within the scope of work, and it turns out that for this project, due to its complexity and the types of equipment, that it's taken a lot more submittal review time than we had estimated. So essentially, that's a staff report. There are amendment number six is attached, and the task order is attached to that, and staff's recommendation is to approve task order 2E and authorize us to sign amendment number six to the professional service agreement with Kenny Jenks Consultants.
Any comments from the board members? So in a nutshell, Jason, this is just something that was not expected, to have constant back and forth between the agency and Kenny Jenks, or
between
the contractor.
Between, you know, the general contractor prepares submittals for various things. It's some subcontractors will prepare submittals and equipment vendors or material suppliers. So it's really the submittals they are preparing and submitting to us. Then we review those, log them in. Some will review, but the more complex ones, the more involved ones, will forward to the design engineer for them to review. So it's really the quality and number of submittals that are being received by the contractor and all their equipment vendors and subs. So there's been more of those, and my understanding is that the completeness of some of those submittals, you know, weren't very good.
I think you mentioned to me that part of that has to do with the nature of the vendor environment, where there have been consolidations, there have been companies purchased by others, and some of the individuals who were more experienced in providing the quality of the specs weren't on the job. And
yeah, that's a good, you know, factor. Like an example not related to this project is we have a project where we're replacing our aeration blowers, and in the technical specifications we listed two manufacturers that we decided during the pre-design phase because they met certain criteria. So these two manufacturers listed in a detailed, you know, specification that was probably this thick with all the requirements, and there was the general contractor submitted on one of the manufacturers that met the criteria, and the submittal was very incomplete. So the consulting engineer, you know, rejected it, and it just took a long time for the equipment vendor working through that particular general contractor to revise it and commit to sending it back. And ultimately, we looked at it internally and decided, in discussion with the design engineer, that, you know, we have a certain project schedule here, you know, with a certain completion date in the contract, and it's taking so long now to get this original submittal in, and it was rejected because it was very incomplete, and they're trying to suggest some significant variances to the equipment that we were working with them on, but it wouldn't work out due to some efficiency issues, that we ended up just telling the general contractor that you guys need to provide a submittal that meets the technical spec. We're not going to allow any variances, and we're seriously concerned about impacting the construction schedule for the agency. So in that situation, the general contractor ended up canceling their purchase order with that particular equipment vendor. And this was a global company that bought this particular blower manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they submitted on the second listed blower manufacturer. And they're very responsive. The submittal was in there pretty good. And so
the same contract.
Same contract, but different vendor. So that's kind of an example of, you know, a bad quality submittal being delivered, and a lot of staff and engineering consultant time looking at it and the associated costs with each of those. And now there's a whole new vendor that's submitting submittals because of the termination of that agreement.
Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back. Any further comments? Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to approve the approved task order 2E for the digester improvements block facility projects professional service agreement with Kennedy Jenks Consultant, and authorizes the general manager to sign the agreement amendment for the task order. Okay, any further comments? Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. Next up is item number 7. Regional flow-based allocation procedures.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So at the December meeting, the board received the final draft version or copy of the regional charge alternative study, and we received a presentation from HDR Engineering, who conducted that study. A lot of good comments from the board. We brought back the final study to the January meeting, which was accepted by the board, and the direction from the board was three items. One was develop a procedure for the one-year flow-based allocation procedure, develop a procedure to implement the three-year flow average allocation procedure, and then to start gathering wastewater strength or quality information for each of the satellite collection agencies. And the board also asked that staff collaborate with the board's finance committee in developing the final draft procedures to bring back to the board for the board's consideration. So we've done that. At the beginning of March, we started the wastewater strength sampling for all the collection agencies, so that's underway right now. Staff prepared the draft procedures for the one-year flow allocation and the three-year average. We scheduled a board finance committee meeting on Friday the 17th, which I briefed you all on at the last board meeting. And what's attached to the staff report are a few things. The first is the section of the JPA titled Operating Fund, which in staff's opinion, also in discussion with Council Govey a few times in the past, that the CMSA board has the authority to base the allocation of the regional charge to the satellite agencies on flow. And attached also are the two procedures that, the final draft procedures that were reviewed and discussed with the Finance Committee, and staff has incorporated the committee's recommendations into these procedures. So essentially what those recommendations were, if you look at the annual flow procedure, item one, it's the flow year that we want to use. So there were options of it could be the fiscal year, it could be the calendar year, or it could be, like, say, the wet weather year, which is typically April through the end of March. So the committee thought the wet weather year was probably most appropriate because you have the whole wet weather season then within the procedure. And when we're developing the budget during the month of April, we have the most recent flow data for the prior year, you know, from a few weeks past or that prior year. So that was one recommendation from the committee that we integrated in the procedure. The second was item three, which is a reconciliation process during the fourth quarter of the fiscal year. And the way that would work is, say the board moves to the annual flow allocation method, you know, in the near future. We allocate, you know, the charge to each of the members based on their flow for this last year over the total flow. So we have a budget allocation, they pay their invoices. Next year at this time, what we'll do is, when we develop the fourth quarter invoice, we'll look at the actual flow over the last year and compare that to the flow that they've been invoiced on, and we'll make a reconciliation. So for example, if the district, you know, sent a little more volume of flow to the agency, that fourth quarter invoice will have an adjustment for additional revenue. If the district had less flow than invoice in the budget, then we provide a refund. It's the same methodology that we use for the EDU, you know, reconciliation process right now. So that was recommended by the committee, so we integrated that in here too. And then under item two on the procedure, there's these formulas, and those formulas are were developed by the rate study consultant that the board reviewed at the December and the January meetings, and we integrated those with the policy. So I think the Finance Committee and staff's recommendation is for the board to approve these two procedures and authorize us to integrate these into the agency's revenue management financial policy. So then that policy will now have procedures for the one-year flow, three-year average, and EDU method. And then, you know, maybe at the April or May board meeting, we'll ask the board how would they like us to allocate our regional charges for fiscal year 13 on either any of those three methods.
In here, I didn't see anything that speaks of strength factor or what's the strength factor really? I mean, flow doesn't flow factors that out, does it not?
We're gathering strength data right now, and once we have, you know, enough strength data, we'll bring that back to the Finance Committee and possibly the board, and we'll look for, you know, potential direction to develop a flow and strength based allocation procedure.
Okay, so CMSA is doing that.
That's right.
Not the agencies individually.
That's right.
Okay. Doesn't the 2006 bond repayment agreement supersede the JPA when it comes to EDU counts?
The payment agreement is specific only to the debt service charges. It's not, it has no relation to the operating revenues for the agency. And the debt service agreement is very specific that you can only use the EDU allocation method for debt service. But on the operating side, you know, the board has, you know, the options of EDU, some flow procedure, flow and strength.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
So this is just the operating side we're talking about tonight.
So we're breaking out the bond payment as the commitment to EDU counts for basing our payments to CMSA.
For debt service.
Debt service, right.
That's how it's currently done, yes. And that agreement, CMSA board and the staff couldn't change the allocation method in that 2006 payment agreement. That would have, a change there would have to be approved by each of the districts. But for the operating side, as you can see with the first attachment here, this allows the board the three different methods just for operating.
Commissioner Hartzell.
In the front page of the staff report, the last paragraph above attachments, so Commissioner Johnson believed that the agency could not allocate the charge using only flow. Staff responded by referencing this section that we have later with the highlights, right?
That's correct.
Specifically, the provision that allows the board discretion to consider the wastewater quality. Now, when I read that, it seems to say the periodic regional charge for each member will be determined by the agency and shall be based upon the relative volume and quality. So it seems like they go together.
Well, then the next sentence is the operative sentence that we're referencing in the staff report.
So in other words, you come up with a baseline quality that's your standard all along, and then your volume is what changes? When you turn...
The volume and quality are always changing. They're always going to change.
Okay.
But what this says is that the charge uses quality and volume, but then it goes on to say that quality, you know, is at the discretion of the board.
So.
Okay, yep.
I'm sorry.
Periodic monitoring. Oh, I see, and then it goes on, if deemed appropriate. Okay. Actually, it's funny because it says, that's almost an aside, at the option, it may be based on EDUs.
Yeah.
So.
And the thing with the JPA, it doesn't give any guidance for any of this, so the board has established a procedure on how we actually implement these things. So there's a lot of flexibility in how we develop those procedures. I mean, really, the EDU count, the board could say, well, it's going to be, the 25-year average. It could be the 5-year average. There's no guidance in the JPA on what you use.
Historically, it's been EDUs, though.
Historically, it has been. That's right.
May I ask
one
more question?
Sure, go ahead.
So, let's see. If we have high strength factors in San Rafael and Cordillera, let's say, you have more total spent solids and more by hemp oxygen demand needs here at the plant, we would probably be spreading out those costs across the three different regions of this CMSA for payment, would we not, if it was based on flow, on average flow? I'm interested to see how we're going to factor out the strength factors and other things that affect the treatment process down here from each agency, because that'll have an impact on the cost.
That's right. And we're gathering that data now, so the board can move to a flow, and then it can move to a flow in strength. It could stay with the flow. It could move to EDU.
Go with the flow.
It's the board's. But from a staff, perspective, flow or flow and quality are much better than EDU count in terms of cost of service principles, mm-hmm. because we should be charging for how much material we're receiving and what's in that water, essentially.
Well, let's say there's a lot of salt water and industrial discharges in one agency. Are you telling me that you'll be able to properly adjust the base flow rate with those factors?
Once we have the strength data, yes. Mm-hmm. We'll be gathering that data now, and probably within the next month or two, we'll have a lot of data information that we can take a look at too.
Because right now we're not dealing with that at all.
See, I wasn't aware that the JPA had the ability to modify how we charge.
Wait, it's right here in this operative section. It's highlighted, yeah.
And that was actually in the original document? Or is that an amendment to the document?
That was in the original document. There was an amendment that was approved in the early 1980s, which added the dwelling unit method. Mm-hmm. But the original document had it on flow or flow and strength.
So C and all that.
But right now, let me just clarify something. Right now, we're not implementing any. We're not telling the agency to implement.
We're just approving the procedures.
We're approving two procedures.
That's right.
And in the meantime, we're gathering strength factor.
Strength data.
Strength data, so that by next April,
we can consider strength.
If we come to the board, we could have possibly strength and flow.
As you know, EDUs they're calculated different ways by the different agencies. CMSA has no control of how those calculations are done or what information provided for us, and we, as you're all aware, we have a significant issue right now that we're working through because of EDU information not being provided by member agencies and lack of responsiveness to our request to substantiate EDU information. So if we can gather information using our flow meters in terms of volume and our measurements, we're in control of getting the data instead of relying on others to gather the data and provide it to us.
So we're changing the JPA.
The JPA
sounds like it.
The JPA has these three methods listed
right
here.
We've all been responsible for recording our EDUs in the past. Mm-hmm. Now what I'm hearing is CMSC will be responsible for that. However, whatever factor you want to use, and I'm seeing those procedures here.
These procedures do not relate to the EDU. The EDU is a separate method.
Oh, I understand they're separate methods. What I'm saying is even though we've recorded for historically at this agency using the EDU count, and so far our EDU counts are what really drive the debt service on our bond payments, mm-hmm. we're going a different direction here.
Well, the bond payments will still be based on EDU.
Oh yeah, I got that.
Yeah, that won't change.
All right. Thank you. Gary?
Yeah. I just wanted to add that at the chair of the San Rafael Sanitation District, and we did have a discussion during our last meeting with regard to this issue, and we try to look at it from the standpoint of perhaps not all the history that you folks have, but from the standpoint of what's the best measure of operating costs. And it struck us that the most relevant was not hookups, EDUs, but rather what your processing has volume and the characteristics of that quality characterizes as quality. So we're in favor of this change. If it's a change in methodology, but it becomes a change, I guess it has to be approved by this board, but certainly exploring, because intuitively it seems, now it's verified, that it is in fact a more equitable measure. And I guess that's what this is supposed to be all about.
That's correct.
So we're in favor of this change. And this didn't come up in the meeting, but I'll just add that it seems to me if it's a better measure, then it probably should be attributed to the bond issue as well. Now, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself there, but in fact, it makes more sense, and it really is what's happening with regard to the agency. That perhaps is the direction you should go.
If the board decides at some point in the future to change the allocation method for the operating site, we could definitely approach each of the member agencies with the recommendation that we switch the debt service to the same method and get feedback from them. The difference is that they'd have to approve that because it's a separate agreement.
I know that Ross Valley is also undergoing some examination of methodology for charging the ratepayers, and it's had a contractor look at what would happen if you went to flow.
Yeah, definitely looking at it.
So that's, you know, you're not looking at the other side of flow in terms of the strength or the characteristics of it, but of flow.
We're looking at strength too.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, go ahead.
That's okay. I'd like to hear the.
Laundromats. So we've looked at restaurants, hospitals, things like that. Prison. You know, if they all start using better best manager practices and come up with strength factors that are less than what they were prescribed under, 2.34 was the strength factor that was applied to industrial applications with high strength, or whatever the multiplier was, then they shouldn't be overcharged. That's how we see it. So, anyway, that's part of the equation.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is, in a way, this is kind of a parallel to that. Yeah.
Pretty close to some decision.
Any other comments?
Anybody from the public wish to speak on this item?
Come on, here's your chance.
Okay, I'll bring it back. Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to flow, I think, you know, we know what the plant treats, and that's basically it. This is a treatment plant. We have to treat whatever is given to us. And, you know, we have the best measurements for recording that, and I think that it's just natural that we, you know, charge the member agencies based on, you know, the flow that comes in here. So I'd like to move this thing forward. Just at least the two procedures. It's, again, it's not an implementation. The board still is going to vote on that probably sometime next year. But right now we want to give staff enough time to start to incorporate these procedures into the revenue management policy, and also start to collect other data so that we have a full range of measurements when we do implement this, if we ever do. So,
did you want a motion?
I would love a motion.
Okay. Do you need me to say again what you said?
Just say so moved.
Oh, so moved. Very well. That did.
That's right. It works every time. All right.
Yeah.
I second it.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I would like to say that I think it's very appropriate to move on with the concept of the analysis of the quality or the strength of that flow, that should be closely examined as a portion of the, I was going to use some mathematical term, but I forget the one. But the quotient needs to be in there, so that's...
All right. So I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Next up.
That's all right. Oh. You opposed?
Opposed. Yes. Okay.
Pardon me?
Opposed?
You were.
No. How's that? Okay, next up is item number 8. This is, I'm bringing this. This is a, at our Finance Committee Board meeting on February 18th, there was a violation of the CMSA Board decorum policy. I'm going to recuse myself from this item. Respectfully.
Why is that?
I wasn't privy to this discussion, and I think Commissioner Johnson should be here to hear this. So I'm just going to recuse myself and not comment on this item.
Well, you can not vote, but
I'm allowed to recuse myself, I think.
Jack?
Yeah. I think if he wants to excuse or recuse himself, I think it's okay for him to do that.
But I think that he needs to remove himself from
Why don't you step outside?
Thank you.
Okay. You just do that here. I mean, you're going to come back, right?
Right.
Okay, just do that. Okay. In my little report. So the Finance Committee met on February 17th, and we were going over the last item and trying to, brainstorm about, coming up with a different flow-based measurement. And Commissioner Johnson repeated her beliefs that the agency didn't have any authority to do that. And then while we moved on from that, we went on to the next item, which was the deficit that was caused by the lack of the EDU counts that came in from Ross Valley. And Commissioner Johnson wanted to have I think it was a $700,000 shortfall.
Almost 800, yeah.
Almost 800. Paid for or billed to Sanitary District Number 2 and San Rafael. And Jason and I tried to explain to her that we're a budget-based agency, and that when we set a budget for revenues in the beginning and they fall short, we don't invoice the agencies for that shortage. No one ever does. Just like when you set your budget and you expect so much in sales tax, you don't go back to the people that bought stuff and say, you didn't pay enough sales tax. You gotta give us more because we budgeted for it. Well, Commissioner Johnson got agitated about that, and she started making disparaging comments to our general manager and to our staff about being dishonest, and to us, that we were in collusion and we were being dishonest and deceitful, and it was in clear violation of the board decorum policy that we wrote based off of the grand jury report from a few years ago. And specifically, it's not labeled as such, but I called it policy number 1B, point 8, which is do not criticize or denigrate staff in public or at a meeting. And she clearly did it. She walked out, and I found her behavior to be totally despicable at that meeting because it was uncalled for. We were just trying to do our job in dealing with this $800,000 shortfall. And she had no right to, comment to Jason or to us that somehow we are all in this collusion against her for some reason. So I can't work with her anymore on the Finance Committee. Okay, I find her actions just to be totally unprofessional and disruptive to the process. And if this agency is going to be going forward, I think we need to remove her from the Finance Committee for the sake of being able to have a Finance Committee that can work with staff and bring forward items to the board, that are totally vetted prior to coming in here and having to rehash and re-vet everything. So I'll call on Commissioner Hartzell if she wants to add anything, but my feeling is I believe Commissioner Johnson no longer deserves to sit on the Finance Committee.
The sad thing is that had she not uttered the inappropriate comments and slurring remarks, we could have had a reasonable discussion of what agencies do, how that would play out, et cetera, et cetera. And what bothered me in particular was that we had staff present at the meeting as well, and to me that was even more unfortunate, because I consider that to be a kind of violation of a relationship that we have with, as trustees, as commissioners, with our executive director, and that we don't say things in front of staff. We don't talk about other people in front of staff. We don't make comments. If we have to be saying things that from the depths of our heart we have to express, we ask to go into a room and close a door. May not be appropriate in there either, but you close a door. You don't expose your staff to these kinds of things. I will say that, I did some research after this with my with our city manager in Larkspur, because I know he's got a lot of experience with JPAs and other special districts and whatnot, and in his work in Napa County and so forth. And it is not exactly accurate to say that no one trues up at the end of a period of time. You're quite right that a city doesn't turn around and go, okay, we're going to raise the fees for building permits. You built over there, but now you owe us another $1,000 because we didn't bill you enough for that. Obviously, that doesn't take place. But when it comes to a budget-based organization where the revenue is all from, well, virtually all from the member agencies, then there may indeed be times in which this was a unique experience that we faced. I don't imagine very many agencies experience a time when suddenly such a high percentage change occurs in the revenue coming in simply by the will of another agency to, at that point, make a change in practice. So, but I agree, I think we need a replacement. And we have four entities represented here, and there's three members of the committee, so I'm hoping that we might find San Rafael willing to lend a participant in this, and I hope that we bring it back at the next... doesn't meet all that often. It's a good way to keep up on what's going on in the agency.
If it weren't such a serious matter, I'd volunteer Mr. Power. It's been in his absence.
Oh, right.
Well, what's the policy? How do we do something like this?
In the board decorum policy, right, when we were setting it up, I asked for a policy to remove a member. And it wasn't really geared toward the finance committee or any other committee. It was more for in the board actions. But we all thought that everybody could just get along after we passed this policy. So there really is no policy written down. It was that we would just do the right thing and all just get along and behave ourselves. This is kind of like beyond that now. It's like I can't, you just can't go in there and say, you should have heard some of these other comments that were going on. It was just a negative environment, and yet we were trying to move forward and we couldn't. And Gary,
it's unfortunate for me at least that Commissioner Johnson is not here, because I was going to ask her a few questions in an alternate the first time I sat here. So I do want to be fair to all involved. But I was going to ask her whether or not the characterization, as you've outlined, is fairly stated. I assume, Kathy, you were there as well. Is that correct? And you're comfortable that it's a fair statement?
He was pretty genteel in the presentation. Okay. It was actually a little a little stronger.
Okay. I was also going to ask her if she was aware of this particular policy, because I suspect we've all said things occasionally that we wish we could retract. And in that regard, I was going to ask her whether or not she had done so, and apparently not, because I did ask Jason if that had taken place, and so therefore I'm assuming at this point that that didn't occur. It strikes me, having served on a few boards, that this is totally inappropriate in the extreme. It's something I would not tolerate, and I'm glad you brought it to our attention. Quite frankly, it's my view, it's totally inappropriate behavior for those that are in our position to call out, as this apparently was done, in regard to the general manager. Even though I wasn't there, except your characterization, and certainly with regard to the first part of your consideration, that is replacement, I would wholeheartedly endorse that, because I think it's inappropriate to the extreme, as I mentioned. So I strongly support that. And with regard to a letter to the board, I feel strongly that that should be done as well.
Thank you.
Do we have any way to put together a policy, or we just simply and write a letter to the Ross Valley saying that we're, and to file to whoever, we are replacing Commissioner?
Well, I think we need to put that on the agenda for the next. Is that something that has to be on an agenda under Brown Act?
To do what?
To modify policy?
To create a. Is it a Brown Acted committee? Yeah.
It's a standing committee.
Standing committee.
Well, I don't think you can create a policy and then retroactively apply it. So you're kind of in uncharted territory, and I think you have the right to vote on the replacement without a policy. If you want to develop a policy moving forward, I'll be happy to work with Jason on developing a policy as we move forward. But I think I also think you have the right to move forward on what you want to do with the issue of what occurred and possible replacement.
The board does have a policy on establishing and using committees. And it does say in this policy that the board has the discretion to establish different types of committees, and that the committees have to follow the decorum policy. It says that. But I think what Commissioner Parr was talking about was having some, new section added to the decorum policy, so when these things occur, that there'd be some...
Maybe what we do is we bring back the decorum policy to update it, at some future meeting. The removal for standing committees, removing members from standing committees. Because that's really what it is. It's not a removal.
We can't remove somebody from the board.
No, we can't remove anybody.
Right.
But we should be able to remove.
But I don't think we need to have it authorized in that policy. I think that given that we're allowed to create standing committees, it's an action of the board, I think the board can...
Recreate the committee.
You have the right to do this. I think Commissioner Heller's point is well taken. As we move forward, it would be nice to have a policy that has teeth in it as well. But in terms of if you want to remove somebody, I believe the way that the policy is written, you have the right to remove somebody for violating the decorum policy as it stands now.
Do we have an alternate for our committees?
I don't believe so.
No.
Do we need to meet again?
Well, you could take action to remove someone from the committee tonight. Then you could have it on the agenda next time to add somebody to the committee.
Right.
When maybe Commissioner Borrow's back, and we have Ross Valley representation also.
And you might want to. Do you have the right to appoint somebody who's an alternate to the board to this finance committee? I'm not suggesting yourself, right?
Thank you.
Because what you might want to do, considering that Ross Valley does have a stake in this, you might want to appoint one of their, an alternate to this board from them to work with you on the finance committee.
Can we do this? Since Commissioner Phillips asked that we send Ross Valley a letter stating that Marsha has been removed, request that Ross Valley appoint either an alternate.
Or recommend one to us.
Or recommend an alternate, you know, to sit on this committee.
But no, wait. When we made the decision to have Marcia, when we nominated people to be on the committee, in a way it was sort of like volunteers, but anyway, it wasn't that Ross Valley had to be on it and Cormadera had to be on it in Larkspur. Right. So we don't need to have Ross Valley send an alternate to it. We need to have a new person selected. And we have two other people who are standing members of this.
We technically have a Ross Valley representative here tonight, right?
Well, yes, that's right. I'm a Ross Valley representative.
That's true.
There you go. So. Thank you. I so often forget.
My only suggestion for Herma, I don't know the players that well, but it might be wise to include somebody from Ross Valley, simply because... there seems to be a fair amount of animosity, for example, and this would exacerbate that. So it does seem that they've got certainly a financial interest. So
if there's a commissioner that wishes
they would suggest.
If the board's pleasure is the removal tonight and sending a letter to Ross Valley informing of the removal, you might want to suggest that they propose somebody for the next meeting to be appointed, along with other possible people that will be considered within your board, whether it's member Senator Fell.
And then we'll vote.
And then you vote.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that's your best.
I like that idea.
But I like the inclusion of Ross Valley. I think that's important.
And then they should have an opportunity.
But it doesn't give them the authority to pick the third member. It gives them the authority to
nominate
someone.
Yeah. Such as an alternate.
Well, as the new member.
I think the idea was presented last year in July when we formed the committee that Pam Miggs, as an alternate, could serve on the committee. Because I believe that she expressed interest in possibly doing that when she saw the item on the agenda.
Is there anybody from the public that wishes to comment on this item?
I just want to be sure I understand. I'm Mary Silla. So there's a policy on decorum for the board and for its standing subcommittees, but it has no, it's just in effect, I mean, you'd be censuring her for violating it, right? Because there's no, if you violate the policy, X happens. Okay. Yeah. And so you're going to remove her from the finance committee, which you have the power to do, but you're not removing her from her position on this because you do not have the power to do that.
That's right, because there's no teeth to remove a commissioner for violating. If I violated the decorum policy tonight, right here, okay, by calling Jason every name in the book,
well deserved,
then there's no teeth on getting rid of me.
Okay. We could impose you.
You could ask me to leave, or and I would have to, normally you just do the right thing. Okay, you just get up and leave.
We could make him not president.
But or I can just not call on, not call on a person, or the board could just not answer my questions. Okay? But there's no teeth to remove me. All right. But in the finance committee, since it's a select committee, we have the power to choose who goes on it.
Just wanted to be sure I understood. Yeah. And a member of the Ross Valley Sanitary District Board could serve on the Finance Committee if he or she was not one of the two commissioners? You mentioned a PM Miggs.
No, anybody. They have to be an alternate or the first...
The representatives.
Yeah, the representatives. Okay. So
great.
Either way.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public? Okay, seeing none.
Are we to see this letter, or who's going to write the letter?
John and I.
Captain, I'll sign it.
Okay.
And we'll send it off to the...
And would you furnish a copy?
Yeah, we'll furnish the entire board.
So do we have a motion then to remove Commissioner Johnson and then and send the letter? Is that?
So I have a motion to remove Commissioner Johnson from the Finance Committee and to send a letter to Ross Valley representatives, or the Ross Valley Commission, for selection, or not
request for names.
Request for names.
Replace the
to replace. Advise them of the removal and to request names.
Correct.
For nomination.
Right.
Okay. Okay, I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. And note that Guasco recused himself.
Yeah.
Okay. Is Pat out there? I mean,
I think I heard him come back in.
So we'll send the letter out sooner than later. And should we have this as an item for next month's meeting?
Yeah.
Finance committee membership.
Yeah. Finance committee membership.
Chair DuPartman, may I ask a question?
Yes.
I wasn't aware that open session with the public in the room, I could be asked to leave the room if I recuse myself. I've seen it in closed session, but I've never seen it in open session.
Oh, yeah.
We do it all the time. To recuse?
Yeah. When we recuse, we're now, it changed a few years ago. We're now told we can't even
hear.
Look somebody in the eye sitting in the room. We have to go out the room.
It's best to just remove yourself.
Okay. Next up is item number 9. This is the fiscal year 12 Ross Valley Sanitation District debt service payment. Jason.
Yeah, thank you, Chair DuPart. So at last month's board meeting, the board took a couple actions relating to the fiscal year 12 debt service underpayment situation. The first action was to file a notice of default against the Ross Valley Sanitary District for underpaying their August 1st, 2011 and their February 1st, 2012 debt service payments. And the second action was to invoice San Rafael Sanitation and Sanitary District Number 2 for that fiscal year 12 debt service underpayment amount. So we informed the bond counsel, Mr. Sean Tierney with Hawkins Delafield Wood, of the board's decision. He has prepared the final draft default documents, which are attached to the subsequent staff report on the agenda tonight. And then we prepared the invoices to SRSD and SAN2 and sent those out. Both of those districts have paid their supplemental invoices, and we've deposited those funds. And a few days after the February CMSA board meeting, Ross Valley staff hand-delivered the fiscal year 12 underpayment check in the amount of about $251,000 or so. And accompanying that payment check was a letter from their attorney, Ms. Julie Houston, with several conditions on it. And that that letter is attached to the staff report and essentially said that for the agency to deposit the check, we need to take action on all these conditions within 10 days of receiving the check. And that we also, if we deposit that check, we have to provide a refund within 5 days after deposit. And that refund has to be a minimum of, it was $225,000. So when we received the check and this letter, we didn't sign this letter accepting the conditions, but we promptly called, a bond counsel, Mr. Tierney, and advised him of this, sent him a copy of this letter. And he said, well, Ross Valley, since there's conditions associated with their payment of the fiscal year 12 underpayment amount, that they're still in default and that you shouldn't cash the check. So then I conferred with Council Govey on that, and he agreed with Council Tierney that the agency shouldn't deposit the check because of the conditions. And then Chair DuPar and I talked, and he essentially said, why don't you just bring it to the board for the board, discussion and consideration of this item. So that's why it's before the board tonight. And there's three options for the board to consider, and I've reviewed these options with the bond counsel. The first option is to just accept the check from Ross Valley San and then process the refund during the normal reconciliation process, which would happen in July when the agency is preparing fiscal year 13 first semi-annual debt service invoices. The second option is to accept the check, deposit it, and prepare an advanced refund as soon as we review the Ross Valley's actual fiscal year 12 EDU count information and verify it. Then we'd process the refund and send a check to Ross Valley. Both options 1 and 2 cure the default for fiscal year 12 underpayment by Ross Valley. The third option is the board doesn't have to accept the check. And if the board doesn't do that, then Ross Valley is still in default. So those are the three options that the board can consider tonight.
So here we are, another month ahead, and we're still arguing this issue, correct? I mean, that's where we stand. And with me, it's like, I couldn't believe it when Jason told me that. So we got this letter. I couldn't believe it, though. We got, you know, all these restrictions, and we still didn't even get an EDU count. And yet we were supposed to pay over X number of dollars, you know, for the over, which I found, you know, just offensive. We had their counsel in here. We had Wendy Miller.
Wendy Martin Miller, their finance director.
Finance director there. I mean, we had a lot of people in the audience that night, you know, trying to impart on them the seriousness of this issue, and yet, you know, we're still arguing it, and it just remains to be seen. You know, to me, you know, when is it going to be resolved? So, you know, I was totally floored by this letter with all the conditions, and I thank Jack for telling us not to deposit the check, just to even give the hint that you know those conditions apply. But Pat, you had something to say?
I did. I thought it was kind of interesting that bond counsel left out that the CMSA was, you know, sitting on a $250,000 check. As far as the EDU counts, they were delivered, and you now have them. Interesting factoid on that is what we did originally estimate was 24,810 EDUs, and we're pretty darn close to the actual number, which is 25,161 EDUs. So there was about a 1.4%. Variance compared to what was it, about 4,000 EDUs that you were going to use? An additional 4,000 EDUs on top of the number that we originally submitted?
We were basing, you know, our invoices on the
estimates.
Fiscal year 11 actual numbers.
Right.
Not the estimate number in fiscal year 12.
Okay. Well, anyway, we were pretty close on that. And then, I got this letter, and
which
was sent. Oh, it's the letter. It's in your packet. From Brett to Jason. It's dated, and you have in your packet, March 15th, 2012.
Yeah, this arrived around
11
o'clock today.
What I'm reading here is, did Council Gobi and Council Dow meet with Brett? And let's see.
Yes, we met with
you. Stated that we needed to do a check exchange just to clean up the process, but each of you assured us that a balancing refund check would be forthcoming within days of receiving a Ross Valley check. And you both
Well, let me clarify. We met with Brett Richards and the counsel for two of your lawyers back in, I believe it was late October, early November.
Yeah.
And what we were trying to do was to achieve a settlement of this debt service payment issue. And actually the whole
operating and debt service.
We focused on the debt service during that meeting, and the deal that we made that we were going to propose back to the CMSA board at the week to two later CMSA meeting, I think it was on November 12th, 13th, I'm not sure exactly the date, was that if Ross Valley paid the supplemental invoice or the invoice, then they would get a refund within 5 days. That was the deal that was on the table 5 months ago. And that deal had been reproposed a few more times, but it was off the table. The five-day transactional thing was off the table by, I think it was December. We tried again in January. And then we tried one last ditch effort, I think, several times. But the offer was never accepted. okay, either by the CMSA board or by the Ross Valley board. I think I recall back in January that we all agreed by a 4-2 vote, yourself and Marsha Johnson left that meeting with a deal in hand to propose to your district. And we never heard back from you about the deal. Instead, we got a counteroffer that was far different than what we proposed. So when Brett Richards, with all due respect, goes back to November, he's six deals ago. Okay, so that was a deal that was never consummated, and it was never consummated by either board, renewed a few times, but is inaccurate, and that letter is inaccurate, and nobody acted unethically. Everybody was in total good faith trying to settle the issue then. And I think what's before you today...
But my question was a simple question.
Which was?
You actually agree.
Well, if you want to hear it plain and simple, that letter is absolutely false. It defines a deal that was on the table in late October. It was never consummated.
And there was no guarantee from Jack and I at that meeting that we would provide a refund in 5 days.
No, you didn't agree.
No, we said, let's put together the deal.
Bring it to
Ross Valley. We'll bring it to this board. And if it's approved by everybody, then we'll make sure the deal is handled properly. But the way he's characterized it here is, you know, entirely inaccurate, as are many other statements in this document.
But what you have today is you have a check from Ross Valley. You have with the conditions that it be repaid within 5 days, and you have the EDU count before you. What they're asking you to do is to accept that check if you provide the refund within 5 days. And I had called the Ross Valley Council today and requested them to get the EDU count. I said that would be very helpful in terms of what this board decides to do or not to do. And a couple hours later, it was delivered to CMSA staff.
We received it in the mid-afternoon. Mm-hmm. No, it just came this afternoon with, you know, supporting documents.
What we really have before us tonight is a something very similar that was on the table back in late October. Mm-hmm. And so it resembles it. It's very similar to what that deal is, what Ross Valley has proposed.
Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you. I'm just curious if our second of three approaches or options that we have, that's been satisfied with the delivery of the EDU.
We could implement number two. We'd need to verify that EDU count's accurate. And if it's not, we'd talk to Ross Valley and get whatever supplemental information we needed. But once we verified it, we could provide a refund, you know, in advance of July.
Well, no, wait, I think what he's saying is that could you verify the amounts within the next couple of days, the EDU counts?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
So we could verify...
And option number two is giving the money back within 5 days, is that right?
Or it's just giving the money in advance of July.
Okay.
Yeah, once we verify.
Right.
It's not within the 5 days specified, at least as I understand it, but rather a reasonable proximity after the EDU count has been verified.
Yeah. It would take staff probably a couple hours to review the documents. If there was something missing, we would contact Ross Valley. Hopefully they'd provide it, you know, quickly. It could be done within a day as long as there's cooperation.
So, I mean, is that reasonable, Pat? If it could be verified within through the chair... just through opinion, because again, I'm a newbie on this. If that could be verified within the next, I don't know, two or three days, whatever, is that going to satisfy your requirement?
Well, I'd like to check and find out. Like, I have answered that way before here, and that didn't work out so well.
So your answer is?
Because
I'd like to get back to the president of the board and find out if it's appropriate. I'm not willing to vote on it right now in its current state, but.
What's on the table is I checked with the lawyer, and you can call her up or whatever, but she said this deal that Ross Valley was proposing is still on the table. Initially, their letter of February 19th, whatever date it
16th.
Was, date 16th, said that the offer was open for 10 days. Okay. And I said to her, we can't make it, staff can't make a decision about accepting the check and providing the refund. It has to go to the board. And I said, so the board meeting is March 13th, and I think I emailed her February 29th or thereabouts.
It was within the 10 days.
No, it was right after the 10 days.
It was after.
Yeah,
right.
It was after the 10 days. And she indicated to me that go forward with presenting it to the board. And so I'm not going to speak for Ross Valley, but the clear indication I got, and even in talking with their counsel today, with Ms. Houston and forget the other gentleman's last name, Tom Morrell. The clear indication I got from them was that the deal, as they proposed it, was still open.
With the clock running starting tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
that's what.
Well, we would deposit it. Can't deposit.
We didn't agree to it, but that's a clear indication I got was that,
we'll verify
that they want to see this thing work, right. And what their letter was still good. Now, am I 100% certain of that? No.
I feel the same way you do right now.
Right.
I would love to be able to get this out of our way.
But
get going.
But I don't think it prevents this board. Either way, whatever way your vote's going to go, I don't think it prevents somebody from making a vote to accept or not accept.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we reconcile this demand that the refund be not less than $225,000?
I mean, we haven't even calculated out the EDU counts, and yet we're supposed to understand that the refund check has to be no less than $225,000. I mean, what do we do? I mean, we got a $250,000 check, and this agency keeps $25,000,
I think if the EDU numbers are correct from Ross Valley, that they're 25,161 or 131 or wherever they are. That they probably do owe around, and I haven't done the math, but I think Jason can speak to that. They probably owe in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $22,000. Right.
We just need to verify the figures here, getting additional information from Ross Valley, and then we can process the refund. It just takes a little bit of time.
And that amount of time is again.
Well, if the board wants to accept the check and authorize us to make a refund payment once we verify the EDU count, we would deposit the check first thing in the morning, and then our finance manager is off this week, but he's coming in tomorrow, so he could verify the count. And if everything's fine with this packet and the numbers, equal what they say they do, then we could probably process a check this week and send it to Ross Valley. But if the numbers aren't what they say they are, then they'll need to provide some additional documents or some clarification to us. That's the only complicated matter.
Commissioner Hartson?
I'm curious, and this is, I think, an interpretation of something here that's unfamiliar to me. In reading Ms. Houston's letter, the last lines above the signature say, notwithstanding your failure to return the executed copy of this letter as called for in these instructions, your act of negotiating the check, depositing it, shall constitute your agreement to comply with the foregoing instructions. Is that customary? I mean, could I just write you a letter and say that if you ring my doorbell, it means you're going to give me $1 million? I mean, can people write letters and tell you that if you do A, then you have to do B, C, D, E, and F, and you've agreed to it?
Well, people can do anything they want, one. But number two, I, without defending the actions, I think she was trying to make it as clear as a bell that if you cast this check that you were accepting, notwithstanding not signing the letter, that you were agreeing to those conditions. And that's
right.
Why I told Jason, and I think the bond counsel did too, not to cash the check because conditions were imposed that Jason couldn't speak to. That it's only the board can authorize what Ms. Houston wanted him to authorize. That is the refund within 5 days, et cetera.
My personal inclination is to want to suggest the deposit of the check and the expedient analysis of the materials that have been turned in for the EDU count. My fear is that if we're off by a dollar or a thousand or whatever, then it'll precipitate another use of ratepayer money for a lawsuit against us or something. I mean, it's a, to me, it's an unusual thing within an organization to just keep challenging us legally.
I would think that, excuse me for interrupting, I would think that, that I would be inclined to, if I were you, if you were going to vote that way, is to verify the numbers and then cast the check.
Well, you didn't give me the chance to say I would prefer to suggest a conditional vote that says that if the staff verifies and we find we can meet the demands of the attorney, we then do the deposit. But I would kind of suggest that it might be, this may just be my kind of distress at this whole situation, but I would think that our depositing of the check should not indicate that we find this normal and agreeable protocol to hand things over with demands. So somehow I would, well, maybe that's said without being written, I guess. It's understood, but if this had happened back in October, we wouldn't have even had to go to arbitration, right?
Right.
Well, there's the whole operating fund issue and the not following policies and the JPA and all that.
Okay.
Well, I remember us being at the table and coming close to agreement one evening, and similar situation right now, other than there wasn't a check delivered at that time. And it didn't work out.
What was the agreement?
It didn't was a swap out like we're doing now.
No, the swap out wasn't going to happen between agencies. It was all going to be above board. It wasn't going to just be through
the finance department.
No, what Mr. Wasco is referring to is that one night we had a kind of a stalemate 3-3 vote, I believe it was.
Right.
That we were going to do something very similar to what's on the table tonight.
What's happening right now?
What Chair DePauw is talking about is that there was never any side deal to have it happen between staff.
Who's doing side deals?
I'd like to be recognized.
Yes.
This is kind of interesting, I'd say. If we have we've had the check for over almost a month.
That's correct.
It seems to me that Commissioner Hartzell's got the right approach. That is, we have the count, verify the count as quickly as reasonable. Let's assume for the moment sitting here that it proves to be what you expect, and therefore we're entitled to the refund of the $225. So after I verify the count, I deposit the check and write a check for $225 and call it a day. The history is beside me, quite frankly. It's kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree with both of you on this. I thank you for those comments. Remember, we gave you an EDU count that seemed to put this place in uproar. We corroborated that data, and then you further corroborated that data, and our numbers were right on the strength of that. So
that's incorrect.
Well, what was it? How many? 1.1, and what was the other?
Your district said the strength was 1.0. We had 7 weeks of sampling. We said that the strength was 1.3.
Okay.
Well, that's a significant difference. It's not the same.
Jason.
I'd like to make a comparison.
I shouldn't bring it up, obviously, right? Because even though we agreed that our numbers were pretty darn accurate compared to what they were, okay? We gave you that information. We got you our EDU counts accurately by, what was it, the 15th of March or whatever it is. Anyway, so for what it's worth, it was a shortfall of revenue for this sanitary district. And there was some costs that were associated with other agencies that are in this group. So what bothers me a little bit is this was a big shock to everyone. It wasn't that big of a shock to us. But for what it's worth, we're not trying to get out of paying whatever our fair share is, okay? But we tried to
you desperately tried to make the arrangements one evening here, and it fell through, and we definitely haven't taken this off the table as far as trying to work it out with everyone. So here we are at a point where now it's down to just a little bit of language in the negotiation document, for lack of a better term. And I think I'm hearing that everyone's okay with everything other than item C.
Hold on. I'd like to open it up to the public.
Okay.
Before we... Is there anybody from the public that wishes to comment on this item? Tell us which way to go. Okay, seeing none.
Can I call the question and say I'd like
I'm going to stop.
Can you restate the motion just so we have it?
I can.
Yes, good girl.
Got to just find my way through the document here. Hold on. There we go. I move that we direct staff to do an expeditious analysis of the EDU substantiation documents, and following conclusion that they meet the criteria, we accept the underpayment check and make a deposit it, and then prepare the refund.
Okay. Can I just tweak the language a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, I would say that in your language about the EDU count, you put a sentence in there that we received it as of today.
The EDU count received today, the 13th of March.
Yeah.
It's the 13th. Tomorrow's my mother's birthday, I know.
Kathy?
That the
friendly amendment?
Friendly amendment, if that the refund be made within 5 days of deposit.
Absolutely, I agree to that amendment.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. I'd like to just make one last comment. I think that, again, this all could have been resolved back in October had we just gotten the EDU counts back then. Had we just gotten the check back then, why it took 6 months later and all the legal shenanigans to go on. I mean, Jack, he got the patience of Job for trying to get us to this point, but it's taken us 6 months, and I just think that it was just a complete waste of time. So, I'll call the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, it was Hartzell who stated it. Who seconded it?
Didn't you?
He amended.
Motion carries. Next up is item number.
I'm sorry, how did it carry? 5-0.
Did you vote? I never even voted yet.
I know, I'm waiting.
I'm still trying to figure out if this is acceptable.
Oh, come on.
we're meeting everything.
Bending over backwards, mister.
All right. Well, hang on now. I've heard these discussions where council talks to council, and then I need to really report back to my board on this.
No.
I know we have a meeting tomorrow night.
No, you don't.
But you know,
your attorney
sent it to us, and didn't.
Yeah, but
and you sent the check.
Right, I know that, and I'd love to get it cash. So just give me a moment, would you?
No, I won't. I called the question. All those in favor?
Like, if there's any chance.
Yeah, I'm easy to work with, John.
I understand that. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor? Aye.
We already voted.
Those opposed?
I hope it works out the way you think it will.
What's your vote?
I guess I'll vote for it. It's not
yes!
exactly what.
Next up is item number 10 that I was going to agree to.
Thank you.
I'm not ready to say you're welcome yet until like.
Okay, item number 10 now is strictly for the record that we are now not in the correct.
Yeah, that's right. If everything's verified and we deposit the check and provide the refund, then the default's cured and we don't have to talk about 10. The only complication now is if the numbers can't be verified, we don't get the information, then this all has to come back again next month.
Can I ask a question real quick, or am I not allowed to speak anymore?
I don't know what You're not allowed to speak.
So, the EDU counts, you need to verify that the numbers are right. What problems, I mean, there was obviously roadblocks to the delivery or something by Ross Valley, gross incompetence. Tell me why. I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is, what I don't want to go through is having voted for something and find out, gee whiz, you guys didn't do the EDU count right.
Well, Ross Valley, what they're saying here is that their EDU count is 25,161. Then all of this material should support that. And if it doesn't, then we'll have to confer with Ross Valley and get additional information. The worst case would be that they don't provide it or they don't have it and we can't verify.
Okay.
That's
no
all
way
I'm saying.
Of you knowing that everything's there because you haven't had a chance to go through because you got it today.
That's right. This afternoon.
But that happens every single cycle, right? You look at theirs,
absolutely.
You look at theirs, you look at theirs. That's
no, you know, in the past, we've just received the EDU count and we believed what was provided. Once in a great while, we may have asked for verifying. When we revised this revenue management financial policy last April, because of the situation with Ross Valley where they said we're going to have 4,000 less, and for 1 month they didn't answer our phone calls, they didn't respond to our emails, and they didn't provide any supporting documentation to help us understand why there's a 4,000 EDU count reduction, we revised the policy. There are two revisions of the policy. One was that we were going to ask for the supporting documentation so we could verify it, so we could report that to each of the agencies. And Ross Valley didn't provide that last year when we asked for the fiscal year 11 actual verification, but they provided it this year. Side note, Mr. Richards keeps calling our revision of this board adopted policy illegal, but it's interesting to note that they're accepting one of the two revisions that is allegedly illegal.
Let's move on. Next up is the closed session, so we'll take a 10-minute break.
Well, what about, can we come back for reports then? Yeah, we come back for reports,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll come back for reports.
Well, wait, that's not fair.
Yeah, we won't do... Okay.
Why don't we do the reports,
okay,
because we have
the
members of the public who don't stick around after that.
Okay, we'll do the North Bay Watershed Association.
Well, actually, I did that very easily.
Okay. What happened to number 10?
Number 10 is
moved. Is pulling.
Null and void.
Now moved.
I provided you with a very detailed North Bay Water Association minutes, and I'm sure that there's copies for staff or people in the back. There will be a conference coming up next month, so we won't have a meeting in April. And Marcia Johnson and I have been invited to attend complimentary attendance because CMSA is one of the sponsors. So the invitation went to Marcia today, just like it went to me today. And that conference is on the 13th of April, a month from today. And there's some very interesting things in here in terms of the presentations having to do with climate change activities and how activities on the coast along the shoreline are being examined. And that's spelled out on the backside. And on the front side, this was kind of cool because it was all about water reuse. It was all about the utilization of wastewater and alternative scenarios. And I have referred to that water as purple pipe water for many years, but that's what it is. I remember when the first purple pipe was laid near the Civic Center and I was working there and going, how cute. Why would they paint their pipes purple? And then I found out. And so this was, there's been some very, very aggressive programs in the North Bay to be able to utilize the water. And of course, they're able to do it because they have less saline intrusion. Las Colinas Valley Sanitary District has been doing a lot of reuse in the neighborhood of the district, and now it's spreading up in Napa and so forth. So, enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a lovely report.
Don't you think I did a marvelous job?
Oh, yes, marvelous.
Yes,
and
that's Elizabeth.
A lot of fun.
Elizabeth.
I see these fun people you get to meet with.
I know. It's great.
And just let you know that
the bagels are good.
There's no toaster.
CMSA and the other wastewater agencies in the county, through our cooperative public education program, we'll have our outreach booth and public education documents at that conference.
No gentler?
Not at the conference, no.
No.
You don't go to the schools.
Okay, next up is the verbal report by commissioners and general manager.
Yeah, so I have a handout here, and there's a few things on it. I'll just run through it real quick. Regarding, the Ross Valley Board approved a $125,000 contract with Stepwise Utility Advisors of Colorado for their own independent consolidation study. CMSA, San Rafael, and San 2 have received public record act requests, you know, from the consultant for various information, and CMSA has responded to that, that records request, and we actually met with the consultant and their engineering team about a week ago. Had a pleasant conversation. I mentioned that the wastewater strength sampling started, and CSRMA, our insurance provider, risk management company, they have reimbursed us $73,000 for a portion of our legal expenses defending Sanitary District Number 2 in the lawsuit that was brought against them by Ross Valley Sanitary District. So that was great news to get that reimbursement. Then, as I mentioned at the last meeting, that the CMSA's administrative draft of our permit was prepared by the Regional Water Board staff, and I and our regulatory consultant met with the Regional Water Board the day after the last board meeting, reviewed all of our comments. They agreed to accept most of our comments, and the Regional Board has issued the tentative order now for public review and comments, and we'll be providing some additional comments on that. And the final order, which will be adopted by the Regional Water Board itself, is scheduled for consideration in June. And the two good points I want to point out to the board is that the provisions in the permit are pretty fair. There's nothing that's significant in the permit, and that wastewater blending is still authorized in this permit for the next 5 years. And what we did is we proposed to the Regional Water Board in our report of waste discharge that we would conduct additional studies and evaluations. There's about 8 of them that they've accepted, instead of CMSA having to construct some facilities here, more treatment processes to reduce the frequency and volume of blending. So we don't have to build anything over the next 5 years, which was great news. Then, as I reported last month, that the RFP for auditing firms went out. We received 9 proposals from firms, and that would be to audit the agency's financial statements between fiscal year 13 and fiscal year 15. And by the May board meeting, we'll have selected a firm and a recommendation of the board and a professional services agreement for those auditing services. Then here's a little update. We had a PG&E power fail yesterday, which took out the whole area.
San Rafael apologizes.
Was it your fault, Barbara?
Yeah, it was a bird.
Oh, was that the bird?
Yeah. We're sorry.
So when the power failure happened, our cogeneration system automatically shuts down because of some interconnection tariff requirements by PG&E. Our diesel emergency generator started up as it should within 20, 30 seconds. So that was great news. But then it shut down after about 20 minutes, so we didn't have any power.
Yep.
And it turns out that we have a diesel tank underground outside, and we have a small tank inside the room. And the small tank in the room has fuel in it, and there's a little float in there. So when the fuel drops, the float drops, and the little pump comes on, and it pumps fuel from the big tank outside. Well, what happened is the float stuck in the little tank inside the room, so the engine used all the fuel in the little tank in the room,
and it didn't refill
the tank. But fortunately, as soon as that happened, our staff responded quickly, one maintenance, to identify and solve the problem with the engine and get it running again. But all equally important operations, it started divert flow to the pond, so we weren't sending partially treated water out to the bay. And our emergency dechlorination system that we designed and installed the last time this happened, about 5 years ago, it automatically came on like it should have, so we didn't have any chlorinated effluent going to bay. It was fully dechlorinated, so that was great news. So no permit exceedances to the power outage. So great job by all of our staff. And then, and the last item here is, this is another handout for you, a letter from Ross Valley's Environmental Compliance Safety Coordinator, and she's terminated our fats, oils, and grease agreement that CMSA's had with Ross Valley for many years. And I've asked their manager by email if that was a board decision or a staff decision, and he didn't respond. And I don't recall the Ross Valley Board, you know, reviewing this agreement and considering a termination of it.
Whatever. I just have one question. Back on number one, agency business. What is PRAR?
Oh, Public Records Act request.
Thank you.
And number five, if I could, I'm assuming that you got some partners with the nonprofit stuff. I'm assuming our firm did not respond to it.
You know, I'll need to look into that.
If you would.
Sure, sure.
Okay, any other comments from the commissioners? Okay, seeing none, I will adjourn for a 10-minute break, and then we'll begin in a closed session.
So she needs to spell some words for you.